Moncrief on News Talk.
Have a listen to this scream. There she goes again. That particular expression of terror has been used countless times in Hollywood movies stretching back over the past 7 decades. In the business, it's known as the Wilhelm Scream, and now it's even the subject of a documentary. Steve Lee is founder of the Hollywood Sound Museum, also a producer on the documentary. Steve, good afternoon to you.
Hi, how are you?
Not too bad. So could you start by telling us why it's called the Wilhelm Scream?
A certain sound designer who is famous for the Star Wars films, Ben Burtt, when he was in college with his pal Richard Anderson, who was my boss for a good long time, they were film fans, and they caught this scream in all these old Warner Brothers films. And the earliest one that they could track back at the time was a film called Charge at Feather River in 1951. And there's a character that gets an arrow in his leg and lets out this scream. It's funny how it's used multiple times in that film, but this was the first time where a character actually had a name that let out that famous scream. So they started calling it the Wilhelm Scream.
Ah, right. But it does predate that, though, does it?
Yes. 1951, Distant Drums. It was recorded specifically for a moment in the film when this guy trucking across the Florida Everglades gets bitten by an alligator and dragged underwater. And it was recorded for that moment, too. But also, as in with Charge Up for the River in Distant Drums, it's like in the film like 6 or 7 times also.
Right. And so the original screamer's name was Sheb Woolley. Is that correct?
Yes. He was a singer and an actor. He was on the old show Rawhide. Ben was doing his research at Warner Brothers, he found a memo Sheb Woolley was a bit player in Distant Drums and was called in with a few other actors from the film to record some incidental vocals and things like that. And Sheb did these screams for the film. And they were archived into the Warner Brothers Sound Library and used in that film and many since.
Right. And so why was it, has it been used so much? People not worry that I've heard that scream before?
It's funny because there's so many people of this generation that just know it from the Star Wars films, because Ben and Richard would use it in all the films they worked on. And then I joined the group and started, going nuts with it myself. But before that, they were in the Warner Brothers Sound Library for years and years and years and turn up in so many Westerns and episodes of Maverick and just all kinds of films. So I noticed it from those films. There was an old monster movie called Them about giant ants in the sewers of L.A. And almost every army guy in the film that dies lets out a Wilhelm scream.
Why would they use that? Why would they go to the archive to use a scream and not get whoever the actor was who happened to be dying at the time to get them to scream?
Well, sometimes it's a budgetary thing, a time thing, who knows? Let's just pull something from the library, guys. We just need to scream. Oh, that one's pretty fun. Let's use that one. And it has such a distinctive sound. I think that there was a circle of sound editors on the lot that were like, okay, well, we need a scream. Let's go for that one. I like that one. I think that's how it started. And then people like Ben and Richard and myself, we started hearing it in all these old movies. And Ben actually tracked it down at the Warner Brothers Sound Library and started using it in Star Wars and the Indiana Jones films. And then I caught on in all the films I worked on. It's in so many. We used it in a bunch of Disney films like Beauty and the Beast. I put it in a Goofy movie. It has no business being in a Goofy movie whatsoever. I put it in. And it just took off from there. And once, we started using it more, people started realizing what this was. I put the story on the internet. And then Pandora's box was ripped open, pretty much.
And Tarantino was a fan of it as well. You work with Tarantino.
Yes. We actually schooled him on that. Yeah, it was his very first film, Reservoir Dogs. We were just going to put it in like we always did. There was a fun little moment where one of the guys is running across the sidewalk and he knocks a guy over and you hear it. We were putting it in. And we just, I was on the dub stage. We dubbed it at our shop. We had a little room in back that we mixed a lot of smaller films on, and we dubbed Reservoir Dogs there. And I was telling him the story of the Scream, and, you know, Quentin's such a film nut. He loves film history and all that. So he started using it in every film that he made since. I think the last in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is probably the best usage of it, because it's a trailer for the Western TV show that Leo DiCaprio is in, and it's like a guy falling off a building, and it's like the perfect, it's like if it had existed, if that were a real series back in the day, that's exactly where they would have put it.
Yes. And its original recording, was it recorded on quarter-inch tape or something like that?
We think it was a magnetic film. Optical film, because it actually has some of that optical pops and hiss on it. And then they archived it into, you know, another format like magnetic film. But yeah, that's how it lived on the Warner Brothers lot for years and years.
Yeah. So if you see it in a modern film, does it kind of still sound a bit old, if you know what I mean?
You know, it's interesting. It's got a little bit of room on it, you know, just a little bit of reverb, but you don't notice it. I mean, in like a Star Wars film, there's like usually a battle going on and big score and all that, and they have to really push it to cut through, but you don't really notice the limitations of it. And it's such a short little Scream that we can get away with it. But yeah, the quality, it's medium quality at best.
Yeah. So is it used somewhat as an in-joke among sound designers and directors?
Well, now, especially, yeah. I mean, back in the day, the Warner Brothers say it was just, you know, color by numbers, we need a Scream. But we started noticing it and sort of laughing at it. And Ben and Richard started this little sort of competition thing where they would put it in whatever film they were working on as sort of a wave to each other. You know, they'd go to see each other's films that they worked on and just wait for the Wilhelm to show up. And then when I got to the shop that Richard was running, the sound effects shop, Weddington Productions, I knew about this from way back when. I'd been corresponding with Ben, and I started pushing it. It's in all these films that we worked on. It's in, you know, all the Joe Dante movies. He loved it. It's in all of those. It's in the Disney films. We really kind of went nuts. And then that's where everybody else started doing it.
Yeah, because it's a curious thing, because you can imagine it being used to comedic effects, but then you mightn't even notice in a dramatic situation.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, like episodes of like the Seth MacFarlane animated stuff, Family Guy and things like that, they use it. And I think it's very deliberately chosen for that moment to sort of, you know, as a nod to whatever film they're parodying. But people use it as sort of a tongue-in-cheek kind of thing. And it's interesting, since this documentary went online, people are like commenting about how it, you know, takes them out of the movie, you know, it ruins it for me. And, you know, dude, you just knew about this over the last few years. Come on. I mean,
yeah. Now, and the count is somewhere around 400 films, but I assume that count is ongoing.
Yeah. Oh, I had a list on the internet on an old website of mine, and I gave up a long time ago. It was like over 200 at the time, and I couldn't keep up. I haven't updated the site in a long, long time. But that's what Anna Quinlan found online when she was researching her documentary, and she contacted me, and that's how that started.
Yeah, crikey. Is there a female equivalent of a Wilhelm Scream?
You know, it's interesting. There is a Scream that Faye Ray did for King Kong that every now and then pops up in things. I like to use it, too. That's sort of my secret. Here I am. You're getting a scoop, guys. I kind of use that in some of my things as my little, you know, sound effects in joke. But Faye Ray did some amazing screams for King Kong. And the sound was supervised by a guy named Murray Spivak, who did a bunch of screams for it, too. All these army guys that get tossed and killed in King Kong. And that gets used, too, every so often. But, yeah, I'll sneak in the Faye Ray scream every so often as a little thing. But, you know, there's that great film, the De Palma film Blowout, where it's all about a woman. You know, he records the screams of, you know, he's tracking down a scream over the course of the movie and ends up using one from Nancy Ellen. So, yeah.
Yeah. Who does anyone own the Wilhelm screen?
Not really. It was recorded before very stringent laws were in place for actors' rights to reuse material. That came along later in the later 50s, I believe. I don't quote me on that, but later on then it was recorded for distant drums. So it basically just exists as a sound effect. And at this point, you know, trying to track down everyone who used it for, you know, if you're going to try to, you know, make some legal case, it's next to impossible. But no, that stuff happened much later. It's just a sound effect, and it's pretty much free game at this point.
Yeah, Sheb Woolley's gift to the world. Steve, thanks a million for speaking with us today. That was Steve Lee there. Steve is a sound effects wrangler and founder and CEO of the Hollywood Sound Museum.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.